to Hero Hype, episode 44. We're back, and so is everything else. So all of the shows are back on for this week. So we do have, finally, a Legends of Tomorrow episode to talk about, and I'm so glad this show is back. But, as always, I'm Danya, and I am joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
Ta-da! And, yeah, if you guys want to get hold of us, want to talk about any of the shows that have been on during the week, send us feedback, whatever, you can do so by getting in touch with us via our Twitter account, which is at HeroHypePodcast. You can send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com. So, as all of the shows are back, let's kind of get things kicked off with a brief history. And this week, I've got for you a brief history of Booster Gold. Michael John Carter was born in Gotham City during the 25th century. When his mother was diagnosed with a debilitating disease, Michael turned to making bets and throwing football games in order to raise the money to get her treatment. After his mother was cured, Michael was arrested and served time for fixing bets. Once he was released from jail, Michael took a job as a security officer at the Metropolis Space Museum. There, he discovered that 20th century superheroes were the legends of their time. Inspired, he stole the technology and some museum artifacts and travelled back to the late 20th century in Rip Hunter's time machine. Almost as soon as he arrived, Michael saved the life of the President of the United States and earned the superhero name Booster Gold, though it was mostly an accident after he got nervous during a live television broadcast. And I guess, why is it kind of relevant that we're talking about Booster Gold on this episode?
Because we may be seeing him on Legends of Tomorrow. Our first bit of TV news is that Legends of Tomorrow has cast Patrick J. Adams, who stars in Suits, as Mike. We previously found out that Legends was casting a mystery hero for the finale who was going to serve as a launching point for season two. Now we know that that is Patrick Adams, and they're saying that he's a fun character the fans will love, and he's a beloved superhero from the DC canon. And so they're keeping the identity under wraps, but the most common theory is that it is Booster Gold, because he, in some incarnations, is actually Rip Hunter's father. So that would make things interesting.
It would definitely make things interesting, and also make a lot of sense, because in the New Earth continuity, rather than the Prime Earth continuity, Booster Gold and Rip Hunter become almost partners. Like, they both team up a lot and solve mysteries and so on, and Booster Gold has worked with, like, the Time Masters, and he's worked alongside the Justice League and all sorts. So basically, he's just kind of hopped around everywhere. And for the longest time, they didn't know that they were father and son. Like, they had no idea. So that would be quite a fun aspect to play with a little bit. But, yeah. Do you know what? When I saw this news drop, and then the Booster Gold theories started, like, popping up, I was like, oh no, Nathan Fillion's gonna be so upset. That's the superhero that Nathan Fillion wants to play more than anything. So at Nerd HQ at San Diego Comic-Con last year, he was basically like, I wanna be Booster Gold. Like, he said, I've pretty much already played a Booster Gold-esque character. He said, so there's my audition reel. So he's gonna be upset if Patrick J. Adams does actually turn out to be Booster Gold.
Well, maybe they'll do a movie, too.
I wouldn't be shocked.
But they would have to be, like, the darkest of dark Booster Gold movie.
Oh my god.
Which I don't think would work.
I don't even know how you can make the darkest of dark Flashes either, but hey, they're going with it.
But just a little other casting news for Legends. We found out that Mitchell Kumin will be playing a young Heatwave, which is particularly relevant considering this week's episode of Legends of Tomorrow. So he's being described as a confused teenager whose love of fire becomes lethal. So it looks like we'll be getting some Mick flashbacks, which
little
is cool.
Baby Mick. Oh. I'm kind of looking forward to that. I think that would be quite fun.
Yeah, and we'll talk about its relevance in a little bit.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Also in DC news, we are going to get some books, which is always exciting. So some big name YA authors will be writing books for, who are all the characters? Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, and Catwoman. Which is pretty awesome. So the press release says each of the four YA novels will feature one DC Comics superhero icon and will embrace themes of good versus evil, coming of age romance, and superheroes from unexpected places who have the determination to achieve seemingly impossible dreams. So Leah Bardugo, who wrote the Grisha trilogy, will be doing Wonder Woman. That's the first one coming out in August 2017.
I'm so excited about these. I love young adult novels, though, so it's pretty much what I read exclusively when it comes to books. So, kind of really stoked that we're getting more young adult novels, because I've actually been really enjoying, like, the Marvel ones that have been coming out, and they're really great. So, I'm gonna have to nudge the Marvel ones over on my shelf a little bit and make some space for all of these DC ones, because they are definitely going to be joining my Marvel young adult novels on my shelf.
And I read the Grisha trilogy fairly recently, so I'm kind of excited about that.
I have not picked up the Grisha trilogy yet, but I've heard really good things about it.
Funny story, she wrote the Grisha trilogy and then is currently working on a spinoff series. I read the first book in the spinoff series first, and then was like, it would probably make sense to read the actual series first. So I read that backwards, but I quite enjoyed them. So I'm excited for Wonder Woman as well.
Yay!
Also in DC news, we had our Supergirl Flash crossover this week, which we are going to flail about shortly. But our big news was that Supergirl's ratings were up 30% because of the crossover, which...
which is crazy.
A pretty big deal, and it's kind of ironic that a crossover from a CW show boosted the ratings of a CBS show, but we'll go with it.
Yeah, and especially at this time of year as well, where you don't expect an upward trend of ratings at this time of year, no matter what. So it's pretty great. I hope that maybe some of the people that came over that are watching The Flash but maybe haven't been watching Supergirl might have liked what they seen and might stick around a little bit, because yeah, I kind of feel there's a lot of correlation between Supergirl and The Flash especially, so there should be a hell of a lot more crossover of the fans. So fingers crossed, it's they might be able to retain some of those people and they might go back and watch some more of Supergirl.
We can hope. Supergirl has not been renewed yet, but none of the freshman series at CBS have been, so I wouldn't necessarily take that as a bad sign.
No, not really.
Because they have a few shows that are definitely going to get renewed that are freshman series that have not also been renewed, so.
Yeah, they're just...
I'm optimistic.
Yeah, they're biding their time for some bizarre reason, but hey.
I think they were waiting for their last show to premiere. They had Rush Hour.
Oh, God.
So I think they were waiting to see how that did before they decided which of their shows were going to get picked up. So I imagine we'll probably hear fairly soon.
Yeah, talk about a show that didn't need to be made.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it got very good ratings, so...
Not surprised. The movie is enough. Movies. Yeah, there's multiple ones, right? Yes, I've only watched the first one.
I think there's
maybe
three.
The second? I've watched the first and second, maybe. I don't know. I remember a little Chinese girl getting kidnapped in one of them. I don't know which one that is. But hey, they're fairly enjoyable movies. I just don't think it was necessary to make a series out of them. But hey, now that it's premiered, if they could just tell us that Supergirl's renewed, that'd be great. Thanks.
Seriously. And on a more serious note, there's your transition. A post that Wentworth Miller, our favorite Captain Cold, went viral this week when he wrote a post about a pretty cruel internet meme that he was kind of the butt of a joke on, where he was shown in his prison break days and then time later he had gained some weight, and he basically wrote a response that's very eloquent because he's an excellent writer and he's written some screenplays and everything. So he's a very good writer. And he basically wrote about how this was a very dark time for him. He was suffering from some real extreme depression and even suicidal tendencies. And the biggest thing he had in his life at that time was food. So it was a very serious thing. So he was kind of upset that that became a meme. But he ends up on a very strong note talking about, you know, the strength that he keeps and encourages dealing with your depression with some links. So that's was pretty amazing. And the his post going viral ended up causing the group that posted the meme in the first place to apologize. So props for that.
Yeah, definitely. If you guys haven't had a chance to actually read this post at all, I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes. Please do take the time to go and actually read it. It's a really powerful piece. It's very eloquent. He has a phenomenal way with words, and yeah, it was just really poignant, and for me especially, as someone who has dealt quite heavily with anxiety and depression at times, like, it really hit quite close to home. So it was, yeah, it was just I think the most important part I found of this actual response that he posted was that he didn't blame the people who actually posted the meme. He just explained what was going on at that time in his life and used a thing that was already slightly going viral through this site to raise awareness for depression and suicide. So yeah, he kind of used that in a really powerful way, which he's also written some other great little bits on his Facebook page. So if you check that out and go into the notes, there's another one about like a Mexican place that he liked to eat at. I think it's called Flour or Wheat or Flour and Wheat. And that one's really good as well, if you get the chance to read that. And then there's another one about the paparazzi and what it's like being in the public eye and being hounded by the paparazzi when you have friends who are not in the public eye as well, who go around with you. It's his writing is insane. It's so, so powerful. And basically, if I didn't love him enough already, I fell in love with him a little bit more this week. So
yeah, basically, if we couldn't love him enough.
Yeah, and now I'm basically, like, my feelings for Leonard Snart have now been amplified by a ridiculous degree. So now whenever he gets hurt, I feel like screaming at my computer, "Don't you dare touch him!" I protect Leonard Snart and Wentworth Miller at all costs, basically.
All right, our last piece of DC news is we got a trailer / sizzle reel from WonderCon for Legends of Tomorrow, which teased the upcoming episodes. A lot of the footage came from that episode that aired this week, but we also got some good footage of Jonah Hex, and he looks phenomenal. He looks pretty much identical to the comic book version, which is excellent. We also see Jewel State, which is pretty cool. We knew she was cast a while ago. And we saw Talia al Ghul, which we were pretty excited about when we saw that was happening. And then she was in like one tiny short scene in the episode, but that was still pretty cool. So there are some interesting peeks at what is coming for Legends. What do you think of the sizzle reel?
I loved it. I, like you said, I got really excited about Talia al Ghul being in it. And then the question started going like, if Talia exists, where the hell is she? but also, the Jonah Hex stuff was crazy good. Like, so good. It basically felt like comic book pages come to life looking at him. And I think it's one of the closest interpretations, like, visually, that they've managed to get from, like, page to screen. So I'm really excited to see that. And it's always great seeing Jewel State. I love her in everything, so more of that kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty much. It was pretty enjoyable. Oh, and we have a hilarious scene where they're in the Old West where Ray calls himself Clint Eastwood.
Oh, Ray. Right. The only piece of Marvel news, and yes, we're giving you 6 headlines this week, not 5, because this just dropped right before we were due to start recording, so we couldn't very well leave it out, and usually this sort of thing happens after we finished recording the episode. So, Iron Fist has cast Colleen Wing, and who will be playing Colleen Wing? Jessica Henwick. Now, you may recognize Jessica from Game of Thrones, where she played one of the Sand Snakes. And you may, if you watched Star Wars, also recognize her from that. She plays one of the Resistance pilots, Jessica Pava. And if you've been lurking Star Wars fandom at all, she is the really cute Asian pilot, X-Wing pilot, that everyone has started shipping with Rey. So, if you're hanging around the Star Wars fandom, that's who she is. Colleen is a pretty exciting character, actually. She is very, very involved in both the Luke Cage and the Iron Fist stories. She's essentially a samurai in spirit, if not completely. And she comes back to New York and becomes best friends and investigative partners with Misty Knight, who is going to be in the Luke Cage series. And then eventually Misty and Colleen team up with Danny and Luke when Danny and Luke create Heroes for Hire. And it's all, like, a lot of fun, and they're all kick-ass. And more kick-ass ladies. I've been hoping that they would cast Colleen Wing since we found out we were getting Misty Knight in Luke Cage. So, super excited about this. Super excited about the actual casting choice, because I love her. But any thoughts on this, Caitlin?
I'm not familiar with the character or the actress, so I'll just have to take your word on it and say, cool.
Did you watch season 5 of Game of Thrones?
Bits and pieces.
She was the Sand Snake with the whip. Nymeria.
Yeah, they all kind of blended in together for me.
I mean, that's kind of the fault of Game of Thrones season 5, let's be real. The Sand Snakes were not particularly well written, and that whole storyline is what made me drop Game of Thrones, so... Yeah, I don't blame you for maybe not remembering. But that's it for news, so I guess let's get right into talking about what was on TV this week. But before we get started, I guess mini announcement. There will be no Flash and no Supergirl on next week. Supergirl is on a break for 1 week and will return on the 11th of April. And Flash is off for 2 weeks and will return on the 19th of April. So, our little bundles of joy from the DC TV universe are disappearing for a week or two. Sad face.
Yes, but we have other happy things.
Yes, that is very true. But I guess not so happy first, maybe Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Let's do it.
Not to say that I dislike this episode, but it felt very much like a kind of filler episode to kind of just nudge the plot to get to a point where they actually wanted to, like, kick things into high gear. But obviously we deal a little tiny bit with the aftermath of Hunter and Bobby leaving. Not massively. Mac has basically gone back home to visit his brother, and you get little mini mentions here and there, and everyone's kind of dealing with stuff. I mostly want to talk about Mech, because for me, that was the most engaging part of the episode. It was the most interesting part for me, seeing him interacting with his brother and kind of what that kind of home life thing looked like, because for the most part, we've seen Mech as, he has a sense of humor, but he's Mr. Serious, Mr. Shield a lot of the time. So it was just a nice, it was a nice contrast to what we've been used to from him, seeing him, like, with his brother. But, on the whole, what did you think of this episode?
I enjoyed this one quite a bit. It was nice to see another side of Mac, because with all the characters that are left, he's my favorite. So I am always happy to spend more time with him. I was waiting for his brother to be part of that organization. I was just waiting for it.
The watchdogs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like guard dogs. What was their name? Yeah. The guys with the dog masks. Those guys. I was waiting for him the whole time to be part of that group. And it never happened. So that was kind of a pleasant surprise. I like when they're like walking through the house and he's hiding behind his brother, like, and Mac gives him the gun. He's like, "You're gonna have to talk me through it."
Point it at people, shoot, don't shoot me.
So I enjoyed it quite a bit, and probably just because Mac is so freaking charming and I adore him so much.
Same. I mean, I think the introduction of the watchdogs was kind of one of those things where I was like, really? You want to introduce another major player right now? At this point of the season? Like, I understand you want to kind of carry on the sort of opposing force to the Inhumans that you did have in the ATCU, but now you don't because Coulson and Talbot are running that. But it just felt a little bit like we'd heard a couple of little mentions of them previously, but then it was kicked ridiculously into high gear and it was like, okay, they're here now. Ta-da! And I was like, oh, okay. We've only had, like, vague mentions of them prior to this, but oh well. It was interesting. It was interesting to see Blake involved, though. I thought that was quite a different... I wasn't necessarily expecting that, were you?
That was another character that I did not remember. I remember him from, like, every other show I've seen that actor in, which is a lot of them, but that was another character I didn't remember existed.
Yeah. I think I've just got... I don't know if I've got, like, this ridiculous brain for just remembering, like, when things happened and what... I don't know. I just... My head is full of, like, comics and Star Wars, and it's not full of any other useful information.
I mean, I could probably do that for, like, the Arrowverse, but I could not do it for the Marvelverse. That's my DC bias coming across.
Yeah. But... I mean, I was like you. I was kind of expecting Mech's brother to turn out to be part of the Watchdogs, especially after the comments when they see everything on the TV. And I was like, oh no, don't do this to Mech. He's already kind of emotionally devastated and not particularly dealing too well with, like, Bobby and Hunter piecing out. But I'm glad that they didn't go there, honestly. I'm glad that we get to see that the strength of that relationship and him being brought into the fold as well and discovering the truth. Like, we've spoken so much about the hiding the truth from people who realistically need to know the truth to keep them safe and or when it's, like, really relevant and then still not telling them. Yeah, sure, he had to kind of stumble onto Mech, kind of infiltrating the Watchdog's kind of warehouse area, but at least the secret is out now and they can kind of move past it. And hopefully that'll allow Mech's brother to kind of realize everything that he's been doing. And you kind of... I really like the little reconciliation scene at the end. It was just a really nice episode for the two of them together, and I think it was much needed to see, like, a smaller, kind of intimate family story like that, especially when they've done such a big shakeup in the team.
Agreed. I actually just had a few thoughts about Daisy in this episode. I was a little disturbed by her actions, and her actions were, like, she was just way too gung-ho, and she ended up getting Fitz hurt in the process, which was a little worrisome for me. So I found her a little troubling in this episode.
Yeah, I was possibly going to bring that up because I was going to ask, do you think, for as radical the Watchdogs are on their part, that Daisy is kind of slipping into that role on the Inhuman side? Like, she's becoming almost a radicalized version of an Inhuman, but kind of trying to justify it in her own way. Like, I was actually genuinely terrified of her in that car when she was, like, when she smashed all of the windows. Like, that was a bit much for me. And I don't know how far she would have gone if they hadn't given her the information.
Yeah, and this obviously isn't the first we've seen of that. Like, we saw that conversation with Lincoln about the vaccine, and she was 100% against it, and Lincoln was like, hey, wait a second, like, some people deserve the choice. So she's very much kind of being, like, Inhuman pride, which again I think comes from a place of privilege in terms of the way her powers have manifested, because I don't think someone like Andrew would probably be feeling the same the way his powers manifested. She gets to be herself, have cool earthquake powers, and she didn't, like, physically alter otherwise in her looks, so I feel like there's some privilege there that kind of makes her attitude a little icky for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of, I think privileged is the right way of looking at it. And we did discuss that in a little bit more detail on a previous episode. But I think in the same way, it's kind of interesting to see that juxtaposed with the Watchdogs and kind of seeing their behavior and Daisy's behavior in the same episode, and, you know, they're not that far removed. So I wonder if the show is actually going to deal with the fact that Daisy is basically becoming slightly more radicalized on the Inhuman side. I don't necessarily think it's a bad direction to be going in. I just think I just hope that they're aware enough that that's kind of what they're doing here.
Yeah, hopefully it's purposefully uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because I do think that would be interesting, especially with the way she dealt with her mother and everything. Like, it's an interesting direction for that character.
Yeah, for sure. But we did also see one of my favorite friendships on the show. Mac and Fitz actually got to share a scene in this episode. I'm so, so, so happy, because you guys know my thoughts from the last episode, at least, as I had said that I kind of hope that Fitz and Mac, you know, come back together and maybe talk things through. And yeah, okay, it didn't happen exactly the way that I thought it was going to, but they at least shared the screen together and actually spoke to each other and had some really cute and funny moments together. Especially the bit where they're kind of finishing each other's sentences and really getting what each other's talking about. And Daisy's like, I have no idea what's going on. Yeah. Oh, I just love how much Mac and Fitz get each other. Okay, I'm going to stop gushing about that now.
Danya was very happy.
I was incredible. I did flail a little bit at Caitlin. I messaged her being like, oh my god, Fitz and Mac are back together on the screen. Yeah.
My OTP.
It's basically my shield OTP. I have no shame, zero shame about that. So, the other really interesting little relationship that we got a little bit of in this episode is Simmons and May. That was really cool, seeing those two teaming up to try and track down Andrew. And I thought the little scene with them where Simmons figures out how to track him properly and they're kind of working on getting that and going after him, and Simmons is like, well, what are you going to do when you find him? And May's like, kill him. I mean, we've passed the point where there's any other option. And I just thought it was really interesting to see Simmons being like, well, this vaccine could work on Andrew because he hasn't fully changed into Lash yet, so he hasn't finished his inhuman transformation yet. And May being like, don't give me hope. I don't want hope. And I was like, that's gonna be an interesting little partnership, I think. Seeing those two tracking down Andrew and Lash and kind of resolving that. And I wonder if the vaccine will reverse the pterogenesis in Andrew, like if at this point it's possible, and if so, what happens then?
Yeah, I have to imagine we'll get some sort of him being healed, but it's gonna have its consequences. Like everything he did, he's gonna have to live with that now.
Yeah. It's living with those consequences and the fact that those relationships are going to be irreparable. He's killed so many people, whether he was Andrew or not. It could be really interesting, but it could also get really dark and really, really awkward as well. I don't know. Because then how do you reconcile what happened with Ward and Hydra and him going off and doing what he did and not necessarily having his redemption arc with a similar sort of thing with what's happened with Andrew? Because where do you manage to disassociate Andrew from Lash and what he's done? Like, it would be a really interesting thing to explore if the vaccine works on him.
At the same time, Ward was a psychopath before he started his training.
Yeah, that I know that I said it's vague. It's vaguely similar in respects to it's going to be hard to disassociate what they've experienced, like Andrew doing. I can't imagine how May especially would be able to get past that now, but I guess we'll see how it plays out, because they need to actually track him down first.
Yeah, I just can't imagine they wouldn't actually go there, because why introduce this possibility at all if they weren't going to mess with the consequences?
Yeah. Yeah, very true. But I guess anything else you want to add for S.H.I.E.L.D.?
We also had the Lincoln and Coulson stuff.
Yeah.
That was the thing that happened.
Yeah, it was basically my reaction exactly. I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of okay.
Lincoln's on probation, basically.
Yeah. Which was, whatever. It was my least favorite little thread in the episode. I was like, it's not particularly adding anything necessarily, but
I think, like, he was saying that him being there for Daisy is kind of a drawback, but I think that's going to become pretty important down the line if she starts radicalizing even more. Like, Lincoln's the one that has the more grounded view on things, so I think him being around is going to be really important for keeping her grounded.
Yeah, but I guess we'll kind of see. Yeah, I was going to say, I guess we'll kind of see what happens with that now that it's kind of moving along slowly, but yeah.
Let's talk about the most delightful thing to ever happen.
I know.
So if you couldn't guess, the Flash Supergirl crossover was the greatest thing, and it was so adorable, and I love it. Basically, Barry and Kara need to hang out all the time, and I love the fact that they pretty much immediately become BFFs, and Kara has a love affair with an ice cream cone, and it's amazing. And what was your favorite part, Danya?
Ice cream cone! I'm sorry, her little, oh my god, yay! When she gets the ice cream, she's like, ah, yes! oh my god, this episode was the perfect bomb to Batman v Superman. Like, I'm so glad that this came so hot on the heels of that, because it was everything I could have wanted, and then some. It was perfect. Also, Cat Grant knows. She has to know.
She totally knows.
She totally knows.
Figured out Barry was the Flash, like, and the way she, like, snaps in Kara's face, that was totally a hint, hint, I know about you too.
Yeah. It was so obvious that that's what, she knows. She just knows. But just this episode, I just want to watch it on repeat for forever. And I immediately started shipping the two of them and thinking, how can we make this work across across Earths? Because this needs to be a thing. This is, like, the most adorable thing that I have encountered ever. I love it. They are just, they work off each other so well, and it was really nice seeing Barry as a mentor. Like, that was really nice. And just them using their powers together and just getting really giddy and excited, and Barry being like, oh, cool, is that a spaceship? And she's like, that's my spaceship. And he's like, oh my god, it's your spaceship.
You have a sister? His delivery of that line, just like a little whiny, like, this is so adorable. Like, everything was great. Like, I just loved how they pretty much immediately trust each other, like, implicitly.
Yeah.
Which is so great. They just like each other and can trust each other. They're like, it's like soulmates across two universes, except Barry has a platonic soulmate in Felicity, so she's like his superhero soulmate, I guess.
Yeah.
I love it. They're so adorable together. Also hilarious, I really enjoyed Wynn in this episode. Wynn had a really good episode, and he just wanted to be Barry's best friend, which was so great. But he was also really good with Siobhan in this episode, too.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so cute how he just was so into Barry the whole time.
Yeah, I'm starting to warm up on him again, and I think a rewatch of the season may help me out a little bit, but Wynn was great in this episode. I absolutely loved him. I thought he was fantastic. I was a little bit, like, hardline mouth at Jimmy and Jimmy's thing, and a little bit at Cat Grant's kind of make him jealous, that's how you win the guy. I'm like, oh, really? But everything else was fantastic for me.
And we finally got a kiss, too.
We did.
Which Nan is a total mood killer in that regard.
Yeah.
Because he decides to activate Myriad right as Kara kisses James, which made me sad, because I totally ship them. I'm not going to lie. I think they're adorable. Same. But mostly Barry and Kara. Like, everything's adorable, and I love them. And Barry's line when he's like, why didn't you come out and we'll solve this like women? And Kara gives him a look. He's like, what? There's more of you here than me.
Yeah.
I just love he's, unlike so many like hyper-masculine heroes, he's not threatened, which is just, I love him so much. He's such a wonderful character, and he fits so well on Supergirl in that world.
Yeah. Yeah, he really does. It just worked. It just worked. And I think, for me, of all the crossover episodes that they've done in the Arrowverse so far, this has been by far my favorite. It was just executed so well. The writing was great. The actual story was great. We had some really awesome moments between all of the characters. And it just, everything clicked. And it kind of makes me mourn for the fact that Barry and Kara aren't in the same universe, because I want to see them team up all the time.
Well, I think we're going to find out on The Flash that there are ways to open breaches, so.
Yeah.
Because Barry has to go face Zoom at some point, like, in the next episode, so I think we'll find that there are ways for them to cross over in the future, assuming Supergirl gets renewed.
Yeah, hopefully, because I would like to see either Supergirl come to their Earth or Barry to go back. Like, I just want to see, like, the Star Labs guys interacting with, like, Jimmy and Wynn.
Wynn and Sisko?
Wynn and Sisko. Oh my god.
I need it in my life.
Kara and Felicity?
I want to see, like, Oliver watching Kara and Barry and being like, oh my god, there's another one. We had Felicity, we had Ray, we have Barry, and now Kara. Like, another one.
Oh, that would be amazing. Oliver would just... He'd be like, no, too much sunshine and happiness. What's happening? No.
I just love it. Everything was wonderful. It was as wonderful, as delightful as I was hoping it would be. And I threw that word as several times into my recap.
Good. So,
because that was the best word I could think of to describe it, just because they're both literally sunshine and rainbows. And
truth.
Everything is perfect, and I love it. I did think that the city coming to Kara's defense was a little bit sudden, so I was kind of assuming that, like, her rescuing everybody from Myriad was going to be what won them over, but maybe it was just, like, that group of people that were right there.
I was going to say, it seemed pretty isolated, so unless there was, like, a big journalist there or something that...
I guess Kat.
Yeah. I was going to say, Kat could probably cover it. But I still think that unless you were there and experiencing that and kind of was a thing that you witnessed, it's going to be harder for people to turn around their opinion that quickly. But I think Myriad and everything to do with Myriad will be what cinches it. Like, that's going to be the thing that solidifies that actually what happened with Supergirl... with the Red Kryptonite was a fluke and she's really a hero and everything's kind of fine, so.
But yeah, I mostly just found it wonderful, and it was my biggest thing was that I just wanted Kari. There's my putting Kara and Barry together. I wanted Kara and Barry together more, but I know Grant was also filming The Flash at the same time, so he was kind of having to go back and forth between LA and Vancouver, so I understand why he wasn't on screen as I might have liked him to be with Kara. Like, he has his own show on another country, on another channel, so I get it, but I would have loved to see even more scenes of the two of them.
Yeah, agreed. Ugh, agreed so much.
They're just so precious. I love it. I loved everything about it.
Yeah.
So, more, please.
Yeah.
And they've said that the ship on Legends can go to alternate Earths. So that is another way that we may see some more CW stuff crossing over.
That would be amazing.
All right. So shall we move to The Flash?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, me going from, like, Barry, you're so delightful, to Barry, what are you doing? Like, I'm just a little questioning Barry using time travel the way he has been recently. Like, this should not be your first option for doing things, like, time traveling, because this is going to change timelines. And as we see, like, with the Time Wraith, that bad things happen. Speaking of which, why are there no Time Race on Legends of Tomorrow? Because Rip Hunter has no idea what he is doing.
I was thinking exactly the same thing as the Time Wraiths kind of showed up. I was like, shouldn't this also be a thing on Legends? Because they're kind of just, like, trampling through time and kind of messing things up so much. Like, wouldn't the Time Wraiths kind of be like, what are you doing? Or is it exclusively speedsters, and do they not do anything with, like, the Time Masters? Do they have, like, a weird agreement, contractual agreement with the Time Masters? Like, oh, no, you guys are cool. You can come and wreck the time. You can come and wreck all space and time. That's fine.
Maybe the Time Masters wiped them out in the future.
Maybe.
I don't know. Or they just hadn't come up with the concept until this episode.
Maybe. There is also that as a possibility. But I kind of agree. I was kind of like, Barry, Why are you not listening to people? They've said time traveling is a bad idea. Don't time travel, Barry. Why are you doing the thing? Stop doing the thing, Barry. And he's just like, I'm just gonna do the thing.
And everyone says, damn it, Barry, you did the thing. And then Barry gets there and is like, damn it, I did the thing.
Yeah.
Clearly that was a... He gets handcuffed to Eobard Thawne's fake wheelchair and is like, damn it, that was a bad idea.
Basically. But
that was the most amazing scene. That scene is like 5.5 minutes long, and it is literally just the two of them, and Barry can't even move. And yet it is the most riveting, kind of terrifying scene to watch. Barry knowing who Eobard Thawne is, and then talking to him knowing who he is, and Thawne talking to Barry knowing that Barry knows the future. Oh, it was just so intense. I've watched that so many times on repeat. It's just such an incredible scene. That's probably my favorite part of the episode.
Yeah, it was such a good moment. Like, for all I might be like, Barry, stop time traveling, I'm kind of glad that he did, just for this scene. Because, God, it didn't feel like 5 minutes, because I felt like I was, like, holding my breath. It was that intense. And I was just hanging on every single second. And Barry basically having to convince Eobard to keep him alive, and that he had some usefulness, and basically bluffing. Like,
yeah, this was like before Barry went, Sisko was like, get this man an Oscar. And like, then he has this scene where he does it twice. He does it first when he's telling Eobard that his plan works and he goes home, and the second part when he fakes the letter.
Yeah. Like,
he thinks so quickly on his feet, so to speak, because he's on the floor, but but he thinks so quickly and delivers it convincingly enough to somebody who's been studying him for more than half his life. It's just so good.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing that was really great about this for me was seeing how they kind of changed Hartley's timeline, and now Hartley has kind of reconciled with, like, everyone, and he's kind of, like, a sort of hero in the current timeline. Like, I actually really like that. I kind of thought, oh, well, for all of the, like, diversions that could have happened in the timeline, that's actually a really kind of cool one. I really like that. And I like that he was the one who kind of came in and saved the day and stopped the time wraith. Like, I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is Barry comes back and he's really confused by this, though he kind of pretty quickly realizes what's going on, like that he changed things. But he doesn't seem to have memories of how the year changed, at least in that, like, split second.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the way that changes, because Caitlin and Sisko obviously have these new memories or whatever of how things have changed, if that's going to tie into how Ra's al Ghul deals with Sarah in the future with Arrow and Legends and that plot line. But we'll get there in a second. But I just, those two sort of felt parallel to me in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought this was a pretty good episode. I was enjoying the really creepy time wraiths. Like, that was a really eerie thing to deal with. And then just that incredible scene in the time vault. And, good episode.
Lots of really big, emotionally hard-hitting moments in this episode. Because you also got the Iris and Eddie stuff as well.
Oh, that moment. That was such a sweet thing for Barry to do.
Yeah. But it was so hard to watch as well. It was mostly hard to watch because I was watching her and how affected she was by it.
It was such a selfless thing because he could have told her, oh, I traveled through time and got Eddie to record this for you because I went back. But he just, oh, I found this and thought you might like it. Like, it's such a selfless thing. Like, he's not looking for any credit. He's just doing it because he cares about her, which I thought was really beautiful.
Yeah. Same. It was such a nice moment. It was just like some really great emotional moments in here. So as much as I'm like, Barry, why? In respect to the time traveling, it led to some really great stuff. So I can't be I can't stay mad at him. He also has a face that's difficult to stay mad at.
I know.
It's kind of like, Barry, no, what are you doing? You're making terrible decisions. Don't look at me like that, Barry. Barry, no. No. Oh, okay. It's fine. You're so cute.
Pretty much. Yeah. But, like, last week was a little bit eh, and I thought this week was definitely a step up in quality.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it was a return to form for me, so... Yes.
All right, Arrow. I kind of liked this episode. It felt sort of like actual Arrow to me. Like there was a sense of kind of fun with the whole Bree coming back and the fact that she was, you know, bringing the bee puns and everything. Like it just felt like there was a little fun that we've been missing in the show. Like everything's been so drama, blah. And this brought a little levity. And Curtis, obviously.
Curtis was great.
Curtis being everything to me in this episode. And his just sheer delight at being in the Arrow Cave and knowing who the vigilantes are, and but not knowing who Diggle was. That was funny.
That was quite great. That moment was like, I'm sorry. I know we met, right? But I still don't really know who you are, so sorry about that.
He was so wonderful, like, and I thought it was great that, like, he comes in, they're clearly being like, oh, he's gonna be the new Felicity, because Felicity's leaving the team, and then he leaves and goes home and is like, yeah, that's not for me.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of a nice thing. And obviously he has this whole destiny as Mr. Terrific, so I imagine he's going to end up out in the field at some point. Otherwise, why bring in Mr. Terrific?
Yeah, it doesn't... And they did drop the Terrific line. Like, yeah. I didn't notice that. So,
and yeah. Felicity used his tech that just hasn't not blown up yet.
Like, yeah.
He can make a spinal implant that helps paralyzed people walk, but he can't keep his own tech from exploding.
Let's just hope that the chip doesn't explode, because that would be awkward.
Yeah, seriously. But I just enjoyed that there was some humor to this episode, and it felt a little more like old school Arrow to me. So I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too, and I always love a good pun. You know, there's nothing wrong with a little bee pun. But, yeah.
Did you see what I titled my recap?
I did see what you titled your recap. Caitlin uses puns after my own heart, basically.
Yes, I titled my Arrow recap, Bad Behavior. Because Bree was out from hacking because it was bad behavior.
Please just say it one more time.
Bree was out on bad behavior.
Oh, I wish that had been the episode title rather than Beacon of Hope.
Oh my god, they dropped the episode title like 87 times.
Yeah, if you'd been playing...
so annoying.
If you'd been playing a drinking game to this and one of your squares was basically like, take a shot every time they drop the episode title, you'd probably be comatose. Poisoning. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that got obnoxious. The first time I was like, haha, episode title drop, and then they did it again, and again, and again.
Oh.
Like, we get it. So that was kind of obnoxious, but... And Felicity still doesn't want to come back, but I have to imagine she will, because Curtis doesn't want to be the new Felicity.
So they're kind of stuck, really, but I don't know. I think it's the reason, her reasons for not wanting to come back and what she wants to do, that's admirable, at least. Like, I really kind of like her idea for Palm Attack and what she wants to do. Kind of also, I'm still a little bit leery about trying to develop the chips on, like, a higher scale to kind of offer it out, because they don't know the long-term effects yet. I mean, certainly keep developing it, but at least kind of keep it in the back pocket until you know if there's any adverse side effects that might come about down the line, or whether something might malfunction or stop working. Like, you know, it's still been a very short amount of time since the chip's been implanted and everything is going great for now, but that's short-term effects. So it's kind of like, I appreciate what she wants to do. I'm just also like, I don't know. Maybe they're not thinking about that.
That would be a plot line that would make me slightly less angry about the way that they dealt with Felicity's paralysis, that if the chip becomes, like, malfunctions or has something go wrong with it and they have to deal with the consequences of that. I think that could be interesting for her to kind of get that back and then maybe lose it again.
Yeah, I do agree that that could be quite an interesting way to go. Do I think that they will do that? Probably not.
But there are ways that they could go about it where if they're basically just not ignoring the fact that she's had this miraculous recovery, basically, and it comes up, maybe someone else targets it or it fails or something. I hope they do that, because otherwise it's still, going back to what we talked about, still really problematic.
Yeah, it is. But who knows? I guess we'll find out as Arrow continues, because it's not taking a break, is it? So
no, and it looks like in the next episode we find out who is in the grave.
Yeah, I saw the promo and I was like, oh, finally we're going to be put out of our misery in respect to who's going to bite it. And
so, last minute predictions, who do you think it is?
It's a toss-up for me right now between Lance and Diggle's brother, because we saw him come back.
Yeah, that was also interesting. Looks like he's actually still shady, so that's fun.
Yeah.
My money's still on Lance, because I don't feel like Diggle's brother would get that emotional reaction out of Felicity and Oliver.
Yeah, that's
or Barry true. Wouldn't go to that funeral.
Yeah, that's true. Lance is done for, pretty much. They sealed just that.
With the way that the judge was like, it's all about Quentin Lance's testimony. Without this, nothing happens. It's all about him.
Yeah.
It's like, way to put a target on his back.
Oh, yeah. And even though, apparently, Damian Dark does not have control of Hive anymore at all, like, Malcolm Merlyn has kind of usurped him. Wow. He's still very good at manipulating people to help him achieve his ends. So he has found people to basically be his muscle for now. So I still think that he could, manipulate the circumstances to work in his favor. So, with or without Hive.
Malcolm remains the worst, even though John Barrowman thinks he's a misunderstood hero.
We're not even going to get into that. We raged about this in private to each other. Like, No.
Just stop. Just be pretty, John Barrowman. That's all. Yeah, so that is a thing that's happening. So next week we will probably be talking about who is in the grave.
Yes, we will.
All right, and finally, Legends of Tomorrow. So there was some amazing stuff, and there was some not-so-amazing stuff. So I guess start with the not-so-amazing. Kendra and Ray continue to be a thing, and that I just find not amazing.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. It was interesting for me as they sort of started off this episode, and I was like, oh, so they're not going to come back immediately? Like, okay, fine. Then more and more time started passing, and I was like, wow, how long are they actually going to be trapped here? And then it, like, jumps to 2 years later, and I'm like, wow, okay, that's one way to basically get a properly established relationship where they could feasibly be properly in love and kind of, like, really lovey-dovey and romantic and so on without actually having to spend the time building it up. Like, it's kind of like, ah, convenient.
Yeah, I just find this whole plotline, like, it doesn't feel like it fits everything else Like, it's funny because when they were promoting the show before it aired, they were saying, you know, it's going to be adult and it's going to be real wry and it's going to be more sex than romance and it's going to not really be sentimental. And I'm like, you realize this Kendra Ray plotline is the opposite of everything you said the show was going to be.
Yeah, basically. And this is the thing, is it is playing on that kind of theme of what I did kind of want to see with Kendra and choosing love for herself instead of love being chosen for her through destiny. Like, you know, I kind of like the idea of that. It's just, there's no real payoff with it, because what you would want to see is her slowly coming to terms with the fact that she can choose a life for herself without Carter, and she is capable of falling in love again with someone else and going down that path, but without actually teasing that out gradually through the entire series and having her slowly coming to terms with that. Because even though she didn't get the chance to really know Carter as he was in the present with her there in this life, she does still have that knowledge of all of her past lives. So that's still something she has to get past. But I don't know. For me, it's happening too quickly, even though in a realistic sense, more time has passed in show with them being together. It's a practical thing that they've done in order to get the payoff that they want without really dedicating the time to it that it needed in order for us to feel that emotional resonance.
Yeah, and for me, especially in this episode, like, there was that stuff going on, and then we had this really kind of intriguing stuff going on with Sarah, and we get the big reveal that Kronos is actually Mick, that the Time Masters recovered him from that clearing where Leonard didn't shoot him. Like, we didn't think he did. And so he had gone half crazy by the time they find him and they bring him into the fold and he works for them. And so he's hunting down the team pretty much of his own volition, even though it's a mission from them, but he's doing it because he wants to. And so he targets Leonard and is pretty much threatening to go kill Lisa over and over and over again in front of Leonard, which is really horrific. And then Leonard does his own horrific thing by freezing his hand off
and then smashing it. And I was like, oh my god, what the hell? Oh my god. Like, really clever that he figured out how to maneuver his way around and get to his freeze gun, but also, oh my god. And yeah, okay, they grew his hand back because that was convenient.
Malcolm would like that.
Yeah, right. It was so convenient that that Rip took that scan of them to be able to grow back their limbs. And I kind of like the quip where Leonard was basically like, and why did we not know about this? And Rip was like, because none of you had lost a limb until this point. And I was like,
face. He's like, oh, okay, makes sense. That was great. Yeah. But I thought it was really amazing the way he literally sacrifices a limb to get to the team and tell them what's going on. Like, it was really incredible. So I found that really fascinating. And the team ends up defeating Mick and bringing him aboard the Wave Rider. And they all decide that they're going to try and rehabilitate him, which he wasn't a hero in the first place. And he's really pissed off because Leonard betrayed him. Like, I don't see how you guys are going to, how undoing what the Time Masters did is going to solve this core issue that pushed him over the edge in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, he already had 2 feet out of the door anyway. Like, Rip kind of said that the only reason Mick was really along was because they needed Leonard, and you wouldn't get one without the other at that point. But the other thing is essentially that Mick, for all that he has saved some of the others out of necessity in that moment, he's still not really a hero in the same sense. And that's fine for his character. It's like, it's still a really interesting path to be taking him down. But it's kind of like, I kind of was like watching it and going, really? Really? Because Mick was kind of mad at you all before before he was taken off the ship and the Time Masters got their hands on him. Like, this legitimately is not going to solve anything at all. You're going to be right back at square one. Talk about making bad decisions.
But we'll see. And now we know why they've cast a young Heat Wave.
Yeah.
Basically. But the other big plot line in this episode is that while Kendra and Ray are off playing house, and Ray is teaching Bill Gates' father, Sarah decides to go back to the one place where she ever felt like she belonged, the League of Assassins. And we got to see Matt Nable's Ra's al Ghul again, which I was kind of excited about, because as many issues as I had with Arrow's plotline with the League of Assassins last season, I liked Ra's, so I was kind of happy to see him again. And we see the whole, like, brainwashing thing that they showed in Arrow as well. So, hey, look, we got a little consistency across shows for once.
Yes, we did. And also, it was really cool that we got that little bit as well where he seems to have resolved Sarah's bloodlust as well in that 2 years that she's been there.
Yes, which is interesting, but kind of makes sense since, you know, she was at the place where she was resurrected in the first place.
Yes, and you would assume that he has significant knowledge of what the Lazarus Pit is capable of.
Yeah, so interesting. Sarah's very loyal to them, and it takes the team breaks in and fails, and hilariously Ray is just like, I can't believe I'm in a prison here again, being sentenced to die here again. Like, yeah. Poor Ray. But they do a trial by combat, which ends up being between Sarah and Kendra, to kind of tie back to their training on the Wave Rider, where Sarah helps Kendra be a warrior and Kendra helps Sarah be human. And Sarah, already having been one of the best assassins in the league before coming back and then training for another 2 years, is just way too much for her and is about to kill her. Kendra amazingly reaches her, which, quote unquote, amazingly, obviously it was going to happen. And after they beat Mick and all that stuff, Ra's realizes that they're from the future because, I mean, as you do. I mean, he dips in a magical life-extending bath, so, you know.
Yeah.
You go with it. Yeah. And he has this kind of tender moment where he releases Sarah from her bond, which I thought was kind of amazing in that we know that he never really liked her the first time she was in the league. Even he put up with her basically because Nyssa loved her. But after she dies, he's like, you know, I don't really care about her. I care that, you know, someone is hurting my daughter, essentially. Like, and they're coming after me through her. Like, he never really cared about her because he saw her as an outsider. But this time, there is, like, this genuine, I felt like there was a little genuine tenderness there, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, and I wonder how that's going to change the timeline, because it's, we should probably assume that the point that we're at, this hadn't happened in the timeline that they've already lived through, which I don't think it has. So will that have changed? Will Nyssa now have slightly different memories? Will it's just so confusing.
Yeah, like, he is obvious. Ra's will obviously remember her.
Yeah,
like, he has to, because, like, how do you forget a time traveler who was once a member of the League of Assassins? Like,
and he's not gonna be like, and not only that, is gonna look identical to the person who shows up,
as well as, like, the one who told him what he's going to name his second daughter.
Yeah.
Which I also loved that she told him to make sure Nyssa is where she picks Sarah up.
Yeah.
After she almost drowns, which she basically knows everything she's going to go through and the person she's going to become that she has really struggled with reconciling all this time. And she still chooses to go through that again and to have that relationship with Nyssa, which I think is really incredible and shows some development for her. And it's also the first time Sarah has said Nyssa's name.
Yes! She finally mentioned Nyssa. Halle freaking Luya.
The But my question now that we have Talia and Nyssa hadn't been born is, how does Nyssa become heir to the demon if Talia is the older child?
Where is Talia? What happened?
Did she die, or does Nyssa just become the favored child at some point?
Really? Because I can't believe that. Talia? Over Talia?
Yeah, that's why I'm just like, I mean, I know literally it's because they couldn't use Talia before, so they brought in Nyssa, and then they finally got permission, but I figured they would make Talia younger.
Yeah.
Just for the, because Nyssa was heir to the demon.
I don't know.
It's a small thing. It just was something that stuck out to me because we have an Arrow episode title of Heir to the Demon. Like, and Nyssa calls herself that for a very long time. So I don't know.
I wonder if we'll ever get an answer for it as well.
Probably not. No. It's just one of those things we'll wonder.
Yeah, for forever. Unless we manage to get our hands on any of the showrunners and they're like, listen, we need you to tell us about Talia. What the hell is going on?
How did Nyssa become the heir? I need to know. These are important questions. But yeah, I really liked that episode a lot.
Yeah, I'm glad Legends of Tomorrow is back.
And they're going to the future in the next episode.
Yeah, Oh, by the way, I've always known that Vandal Savage has been at this point in the future, but it was too dangerous to go to this point in the future, even though I knew that this was a static point in time where he would always be. Well, newsflash, Rip Hunter, he's always dangerous. Like, he's killed Carter, he's killed a lot of people, he almost killed Kendra, like, he hasn't exactly been a walk in the park of a character in any of the time periods that you've been in so far. He's kind of dangerous no matter what point in history you've encountered him at. So I'm calling bullshit.
Rip Hunter is basically incompetent.
Yeah.
It's getting comical at this point.
Yeah, it is a little bit, but hey, off to the future.
Family resemblance to Booster Gold, perhaps. All right. I guess that's it for TV.
Yeah, so suppose we'll move on to movie headlines, but it's back over to you because we have zero Marvel and all DC.
Oh, Lord. Okay. So some of these are actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
So such as the fact that Suicide Squad is apparently going into reshoots to be funnier. Like, apparently the trailers that we've seen have literally every single funny moment in them. So after Deadpool and probably the response to how grim Batman v Superman was, they're doing some reshoots to make it more entertaining.
And I mean, it's not just reshoots, it's big reshoots. Like, we're talking tens of millions of dollars worth of reshoots here. It's significantly going to change either the storyline or, like, the film in general. Like, this is massive, and they gotta be hoping that it pays off for them at the end, because it's put a hell of a lot more on top of their budget.
And why was this not an amusing movie to begin with? Like, the way they've been advertising it makes it seem like it's gonna be a funny movie.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Like, why market it in that way if that's not what it's going to be? Like, that's...
If they market it that way, clearly they know that's what people want, so why is the movie not like that? So DC continues to be a dumpster fire, basically, on the movie side.
But hopefully, when they correct this with the reshoots, it's gonna help. I really, really do want to like Suicide Squad, because I enjoyed the trailers.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm still not there for Jared Leto, but, you know.
I mean, there's a chance that he's not going to be a big part of the movie because it's going to be about the Suicide Squad, and he's not part of the Suicide Squad. So as long as we've got limited amounts of him, I'll be all right.
As long as he's not in it as much as Jesse Eisenberg was in Batman v Superman.
Oh, dear.
So speaking of Batman v Superman, reviews? Terrible. It currently has a 29% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What about the audience score?
It is a 71, which I have yet to meet anyone besides Pam, who you'll hear on our special, who even remotely liked it. So I find that a little hard to believe.
But that's dropped a lot. It was sitting around the 89-90 mark. So that's dropped quite significantly.
But how, despite that, as of today, according to Box Office Mojo, it's at $530 million worldwide.
Oh, it's only made another $38 million? Oh, okay. Well, it's slowing down. The momentum isn't really there.
I imagine the word of mouth has been really hurting it.
It's possible. It's entirely possible. And the other thing is that $500 million is great, but it was also an expensive movie to make. And you've got to think about it in respects that have whatever profit it's making, have it. And that's what the studio's getting.
Yeah. And with that in mind, there are currently two main petitions online that are asking for Zack Snyder to be booted out of the DC Cinematic Universe. So... lots of people are very unhappy.
And it's gaining a lot of traction. But, you know, if Zack Snyder goes, I really need him to take David Goyer with him, because I can't handle either of them working on DC stuff anymore.
Take both the problem aspects.
Yeah, because David Goyer was the problem with Constantine on the TV side as well. Like, Daniel Cerone was fantastic. Like, his ideas for Constantine were great. And when he was so heavily involved in everything, you had really great episodes. And the writing was great. And it really felt like Constantine. And everything was kind of throwing back to the comics. But then when David Goyer stuck his goddamn foot in his mouth all the time, you ended up with the fans basically going, no, we're not going to support this because you're not being true to the character. So... it got very messy, so I wouldn't dislike Zack Snyder and David Goyer leaving and getting other people to look at the DC Cinematic Universe. I'm looking forward to seeing other directors and screenwriters take on these characters and movies, because I just really need something else than whatever we got in Man of Steel and Batman v Superman. And you can hear the rest of my thoughts on our Batman v Superman special. Oh dear.
Yeah. But speaking of, we'll go back to the delightful with Batman.
Yes.
We got two, not just one, but two trailers for the Lego Batman movie. And they are basically amazing. The first one features Bruce coming home to the Batcave, and like his computer is Siri, and he puts some food in the microwave and puts the wrong time in and is waiting for his food to be done. And the second one has him like dropping some sick beats and dropping the mic, and it's basically just hilarious. And I need it now.
Yeah. Basically, Lego Batman is here and everything is awesome. Oh,
so funny. Like, he's Master Wayne, are you staring at the old family portraits again? And like, referencing, he's like, I remember you going through this phase, and like every year a Batman movie came out.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm really, really looking forward to this movie so much. And the money shot of the Justice League and Lego in this trailer is great. It just, I'm so excited for this movie. So, so excited. Just everything about both of these trailers was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, the first one aired in front of Batman v Superman, at least for me, and that was the most enjoyable part of my time at the theater.
So. Oh, no, the first one didn't air in front of my showing of Batman v Superman, the second one did.
Oh.
Ah, that's a...
interesting.
Yeah. Huh. There we go.
So, yeah. We're excited for Lego Batman, basically.
Yeah.
Speaking of other things we enjoy, Wonder Woman. We have a couple Wonder Woman pieces. We got the picture of some Amazons last week, and there was a little bit of backlash about why are they all white. And so the director, Patty Jenkins, quickly said, don't worry, there's a lot of diverse characters in the movie. This was just a shot of Diana's direct family. So she is telling us we will see plenty of diversity in the film, which we will wait and see for that.
Yeah, once we've got the visual confirmation on that, I'll believe it. But yeah, please, because the Amazons are very diverse in the comics, so...
And just a little bit else, Gal Gadot was talking to the LA Times, and she's saying that the Diana in the Wonder Woman movie is going to be very different from the one who was the bright spot of Batman v Superman. So saying that that Wonder Woman has been around a long time, and she's experienced, she knows about the world of men. However, the movie coming out next year is her kind of growing up, basically saying she's very pure, she's more naive, she's a young idealist who does not really understand the complexities of life and the complexities of men. So this will be a slightly different take on the character that kind of shows us, essentially, she tells Bruce at one point in the movie that she walked away from the world of men 100 years ago, and now we are going to find out why in this movie. But she also talks about her respect for the character and how she's iconic, and she feels a sense of responsibility to tell the story well. So I think that was nicely put.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense that Wonder Woman isn't going to be as experienced and as hardened to the world as she was in Batman v Superman. So if we'd have got exactly the same character when it's like the first time she's coming to Earth, then it wouldn't necessarily have made much sense. So I'm kind of glad that we're not getting exactly the same character, because there's got to be some development from where she began to where she ends up.
I'm just very excited for this movie.
Yeah, same. I'm really, really, really looking forward to it, especially after seeing her in Batman v Superman. So,
yes. And that was pretty much all our movie news this week.
Yes. So, Comic Corner, doing something a little bit different, because I've had a couple of people ask me privately and through my personal Twitter account about something that was kind of... They'd announced it back in February, but they kind of expanded a little bit more on what was going on with something called DC Rebirth. Now, at WonderCon, they announced a lot of the titles that were going to be coming with DC Rebirth, so I thought that I'd run through some of the basics of what the hell is going on. So, what is DC Rebirth? Well, as the name suggests, it's providing a rebirth for DC's titles. Yeah, that's right, forget about Convergence, and the new 52 DC is basically starting over. So, at WonderCon, they announced the titles getting the rebirth makeover, which includes Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Aquaman, Green Arrow, the Green Lantern Corps, Titans, Hellblazer, Justice League, and that's only the beginning. There's loads, loads, loads more. So Rebirth is going to kick off with an 80-page special by Geoff Johns, which will be introducing the event before all titles revert back to issue number one. So if you've been hesitating about getting into DC regularly, now might be a good time to think about it. So the event is going to take the best of the best of DC's characters, much like Marvel's Battle World and Secret Wars did, and then move them into their new runs. So some characters will be pre-Convergence and have their whole legacies attached, and some will retain their new 52 personalities and stories. So DC are also making a price shift with this pretty much a reboot, and all issues will be $2.99, which is bucking the current upward trend of single issue prices, which is a welcome change, especially for me. But for now, information is light on which characters will be which, but I'll be keeping tabs on everything, and I'll give you tips and recommendations as we get closer to the June release. Though, if you're patient like I am, you can pre-order some of the titles via Comixology already.
And speaking of comics, just quickly, I got a exclusive preview from DC of the next issue of Adventures of Supergirl, which is the comic that's tying into the CBS series. So you can read those pages on Hypeable and you'll get a full review of the next issue. I've been reviewing every issue as they come out on Hypeable.
Yes, it's actually a really nice little tie-in comic. So if you haven't checked that out, do, because it's really fun. I've really been liking it.
And the issues are only 99 cents. So
yeah, so super cheap. Yeah. It's super fun.
It gives us a little more insight into Kara on the TV show. It's written by Sterling Gates, who has written most of the really iconic Supergirl stories. So it's in good hands, and it ties into the TV show. And I think it gives us some good insight into Kara. She has a lot of internal monologues that give us some really interesting information about her that we don't get on the show. So it's a nice addition to the show.
Yeah, it's great. So I'll put a link to Comixology for all of the current DC Rebirth pre-orders that are coming up, and that's from June. I'll also put a link to the exclusive that Caitlin got for this comic for Supergirl, and I'll maybe put in, like, do you have a tag that you're using on Hypeable for just the reviews?
You can just look for Adventures of Supergirl.
Perfect. So I will put a link to all of the reviews that Caitlin has done so far as well, so you guys can check that out. But I guess let's get into our feedback. So, yeah, quite a few little bits of feedback this week, so thank you again, guys. So let's start off with Stephanie, who says, you guys are so unenthused for Most Wanted, and now I'm, like, bouncing in my seat with excitement. We're basically getting gender-swapped Burn Notice. I am all about this. Now, yes, I was right there with Caitlin about being really unenthused for Most Wanted. Then I saw this tweet, and everything changed, because I loved Burn Notice so much. It was such a great series, so now that you've made the correlation to that, in my mind, I'm kind of like, oh no, you're getting me, like, really excited, and I've, like, flipped straight back into optimistic mode, and Caitlin's just going to be shaking her head at me.
I mean, I couldn't make it through the Burn Notice pilot, so this does not work for me.
Okay. I loved Burn Notice. I thought it was great fun, so
Anthony Ciano says, am I the only one who wishes Kara kissed Barry goodbye instead of her kissing Jimmy?
Can she kiss both of them? Like, is that
true? I saw this great, which was kind of sad also, like, parallel gif set on Tumblr that was basically, three ladies. It was Felicity and Patty and Kara all saying goodbye, Barry, as he, like, ran off. And I was so depressed when I saw that.
Oh. But yeah, for me, when in doubt, just put them all together. Yeah. Barry and Jimmy would be cute as well. So once he gets over his weird jealousy bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Less love triangles, more threesomes.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's my motto.
Yeah. So Kim Veyman says, so much nerdy awesomeness on tonight's Supergirl. Loved it. Yeah.
Kicky feet. I loved it so much. Brittany Koza says, tonight's crossover was definitely delightful. # adorkable heroes.
Yeah. I see that you guys are picking up our word. I like it.
But it's the perfect word because it's so really true.
I don't know what else we could use to describe it, really. Sarah also left us a comment, said, I dropped Supergirl because I wasn't enjoying it, but I am loving Barry and Kara's dynamic. They're both so nerd cute.
And I would encourage you to pick it back up because it has gotten quite good, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a really strong series for me. It's a balm, I think, to some of the darker storylines that we're getting without, like, it's got some elements that kind of verge into the serious, but it's just,
yeah, and it's really finding its stride, I feel like, in the second half especially, so all enjoyment. And finally, Matthew Todros says, loving the Harry Potter talk at the beginning of Arrow. Yeah, that was great. It was Oliver, or Laurel tries to not say Felicity's name, and Oliver says, she's not Voldemort, Laurel.
And the thing is that they're not surprised that he knows Harry Potter. They're surprised that he's read Harry Potter.
Yeah, Diggle says, like, I thought you would have seen the movies, and he goes, there were movies. Oh, that was so great. I loved that, too. Part of that enjoyment, like, the humor that this episode brought back, I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. I love it when they do those little pop culture references, and they just slide them in there. That it just...
Especially the things that Oliver missed while he was on the island.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like he needs a Captain America-style notebook for things he needs to catch up on. So, let's get to question of the week. But before we do, guys, if you want to leave us feedback or you want to answer our question of the week, you can do so by sending us a tweet, which is to @HeroHypePodcast. You can send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com as well. Or if you're feeling incredibly generous, if you want to, you can go and rate us and leave a little review on iTunes, which, if you enjoy the podcast, it will help other people to find us.
That would be delightful.
And you'll have to see if you can top that one review that we got. Loving us almost as much as Steve loves Bucky, which I'm still not over. Still never over that. But, so, last week we asked you, what celebrity wedding would you want to crash? And Anthony said, I'd like to crash the West Allen wedding, even though they aren't real. That's the best I could come up with.
And Cisco dancing, like he was in the club.
Yeah. Yeah, I could be on board with that.
That would be enjoyable. All right, our question of the week for this week, in honor of multiple Earths and Barry being so excited about Kara being an alien, which was so freaking adorable.
Yeah.
What would you want your alternate universe self to be on another Earth?
So hit us up on the aforementioned places, and we'll read out our favorites on the next episode. But until then, guys, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.